Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to have you back with us. I went out on the road this week, this past week, I should say, it being Sunday now, the first day of the week. What's the date? December 9th, 2012. I went out on the road for just a few days, and I came home and my 11-year-old daughter was knitting a scarf. Knitting a scarf, I said. I mean, I know it's cliche to say that it seems like only yesterday I was changing her diapers, but I guess I'll just be cliche. Since it's the holiday season, cliches are apropos. Anyway, I don't know what I'm getting for Christmas this year, but if it is a scarf, I'll be the happiest dad around. I know. I know, it's so sappy. I remember when I was a teenager, me and my smart-mouth punk friends used to sit around making fun of guys like me who got a scarf from their 11-year-old on Christmas, and now here I am. I can't wait. I'm not even sure the scarf is for me, but I was astounded to see her sitting there knitting. To me, knitting has always seemed like a complex mystery, something I've never figured out. So I was very impressed. We were driving to church this morning, up here in the frigid climes, nearly a mile higher than any normal person should ever live. Freezing, snow on the roads. And here's my 11-year-old daughter, Nicole, in the passenger seat, knitting the whole time on the way to church. So I hope my pipes last through the show today. I sang with the band at church this morning, which I haven't done in a while, and anyway, my pipes ain't what they used to be, I can tell you that. But a good time was had by all, at least by all of us in the band. I'm not sure how the folks in the pews took it, but nobody left and nobody threw fruit at us, rotten or otherwise. So it was a good time. But there she was, knitting on the way to church. I told her, I said, you're going to make someone a good wife. That's what I told her, all right. Okay, I know. Is that a sexist comment to assume that she's going to get married? No, it's not sexist.
It's sexist to say that she's going to be a wife.
It's sexist to say that she's going to be someone's wife, and I apologize for that. But
she could be a husband.
You never know. By the time she's of marrying age, there could be options. There could be so many options that we can't even imagine. Anyway, that's why we keep our daughters primarily locked here into the McBurney compound, cordoned off from the rest of the known world. Try to just keep them away from all those things as best we can. But anyway, it was quite the... I don't know why I'm so hung up on the knitting thing, but I guess because I never learned how to do it. And there she is doing it. I was very impressed. I had just taught her a G chord, a D chord, a C chord, and she seemed interested, but now she can't put the knitting needles down. She's like, forget the guitar. I want to make a scarf. Mom's happy. Keep her away from those musician types. Keep her in the house knitting. All right. Now, we do have important news to get to, I think. Well, you'll have to determine how important it is. And I guess I'll be able to tell. I can go back and look at the metrics of the show and see how long everybody listened. But we'll start in Palm Coast, Florida. This is from CBS in Tampa. Dateline Palm Coast, Florida. The mother of a 10-month-old baby left her child in the care of 41-year-old James Irvine. However, Mr. Irvine soon abandoned the child to go out drinking. Shocking story, right? He allegedly told her that though he had been at a bar, he did not leave the child alone. He said no, he left the child in the care of the family's pit bull dog. He didn't leave the child alone. She was in the care of a pit bull. Now, when the mom came home, The dog was seated outside the room where the child was left, and the door was shut, lending some credence to Mr. James Irvine's story that, "Well, officer, I might have been drinking, but I ain't drunk, and I left the child with a pit bull dog. That child was safe." "Officer, that child is just fine." The dog was out seated outside the room. The door was shut. He was reportedly arrested around 12:30 a.m. last Saturday. We assume the man, not the dog. The dog apparently was doing his job. But we assume it's the man, although the grammatical structure of this article, according to reports, the dog was seated outside the room, he was reportedly arrested around 12:30 a.m. The uninitiated reader might assume that the dog was arrested. But we're going to assume it was the man, since the dog was on station, on duty, as required by Mr. James Irving. Officer. What's that?
Probably
a more reliable caretaker than Mr. James Irvine. That's probably true, now that I think about it. Okay. Now, I've got an interesting story here regarding the killing of Osama bin Laden, which officially now is being called the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden by the folks over at the Western Journalism Center. Now, I'm familiar with the Western Journalism Center just tangentially. I've heard the name over the years. And so before I quoted the story, I wanted to find out who exactly these people are there at the Western Journalism Center. So I Googled them up, and turns out there's a fellow who writes for Media Matters. His name is Terry Crapple. And he hates the Western Journalism Center. He says they're a bunch of kooks, a bunch of nuts, a bunch of right-wing crazies. Yeah, he says they were founded by Joseph Farah and publisher James Smith back in 1991. So that's all I had to read. When I read that Tony Crapple of Media Matters does not like the Western Journalism Center, I immediately assumed that they're a reliable news source. So here's the story. According to the Western Journalism Center, which I guess they changed their name here. Let me see. Now they're the Center for Western Journalism. I don't know what happened. Maybe their server archives got full and they decided to just do something else. The Center for Western Journalism. Obama, that's Barry Ho, the president. You got to spit after you say that. President Barry Ho lied to every American and the rest of the world about the date of the alleged Osama bin Laden killing, according to recently released Department of Defense emails. Now, you'll remember that Barry gave a live speech on May 1st, 2011, and he said, "Today, at my direction, yada-da-da-da, I went in and I personally killed..." He didn't quite say it that way, but he did note that it had happened that day, May 1st, May Day, a day that communists love. So Barry must have been particularly giddy announcing the killing of Osama bin Laden on May Day, 2011. Well, according to the author at the Western Journalism Center, the author says, "Emails in my possession received directly from the Department of Defense as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request reveal that the mission to allegedly kill Obama. I apologize, Mr. Bin Laden. The mission to allegedly kill Osama occurred April 28th, 2011 or earlier, not May 1st, 2011, as Obama claimed." So, the author asks, why did Obama lie about the date that Osama was killed? What else is being lied about by Obama and the military officials regarding the alleged death of Osama bin Laden? Did those unnamed men in leadership even look at the body bag that was allegedly on the USS Stennis, where it was allegedly dumped into the deep blue sea? The author says, hey, anything could have been in that body bag, for crying out loud. It could have been a bag of bowling balls, for all we know. I mean, it could have been Vince Foster. We just don't know. There's no pictures. There's nothing. Anyway, you all remember when I relaunched the Weekly Worldview back in 2009, my opening show, I stated that I believed Osama bin Laden had died some years earlier, and like that. So anyway, I've always been suspicious. And anyway, I've got something even more insidious and devious and creepy and freaky from Barry Ho. Did anybody watch? Barry Ho gave a speech. Where's my notes here? Barry Ho gave a speech at a toy factory in Hatfield, Pennsylvania this past week. Now, did anybody besides me notice that he was standing in front of a pile of boxes with a red label obviously slapped on these boxes after the fact that said toys, T-O-Y-S? Now, I don't know how many of you have worked in shipping and receiving and manufacturing facilities, but I used to work at a neon sign shop. And when we piled our boxes up on the pallets to ship them out, there wasn't a big sign on them that said neon sign, neon sign, neon sign. No, it had our logo and maybe the name of the particular sign that was going out. But it didn't just say neon sign. And what toy factory has a stack of boxes that says toys? Did anyone notice this? I'm going to put a link on the website so that you can watch the video. It is eerily reminiscent, if you think back to the first Gulf War, ladies and gentlemen. Does anyone remember the baby milk factory incident? Okay, let's go back in the Wayback Machine. Come back, walk with me on this. Who was the dictator over there in Iraq? I'm forgetting his name. Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein claimed that American forces bombed a baby milk factory. And to prove it, he had video shot of factory workers cleaning up the wreckage, and they wore these perfectly clean white outfits, overalls. And on the back, in English, it said, Baby Milk Factory. and we all laughed. We all laughed about it. We said, look at this Saddam Hussein, this two-bit tin pot dictator trying to manipulate the media. Slapping baby milk factory on the back of the overalls of these alleged factory workers. Well, now our president and current potential dictator has the word toys slapped on the back on these boxes behind him, proving once again, ladies and gentlemen, that Barry Ho's target demographic is very stupid people. Because I can see his handlers going in before the photo op and saying, well, we need to convey to the average American product of the public schools that this is a toy factory. So what do? They print some red labels with big bold letters, toys, and they slap it on the boxes right behind Barry's mug. Anyway, so what else is being lied about, ladies and gentlemen, as the folks at Western Journalism ask regarding the bag of bowling balls that was thrown off the deck of the Stennis? Anyway. Well, some say we may never know, and this side of eternity, we may never know. But we will find out one day where and when Osama bin Laden died. And the more I look at how this administration functions, ladies and gentlemen, the less I feel like a kook burger saying that they may have staged the killing of Osama bin Laden. All right, that's all. I'm not saying I'm not a kook. I just feel like less of a kook saying it the more and more I watch these people and the toy factory and the baby milk and all of that with these people. All right. I've already got a sore throat. Please bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. Now, as an addendum to that story regarding the potential feigning of the killing of Osama bin Laden, let's go to the war file. This is from WorldNet Daily, another Joseph Farah product. Dun, dun, dun. I'm obviously being manipulated by Joseph Farah and his minions. But this isn't written by Farah. This is quoting outspoken Republican Congressman Louis Gohmert is continuing to press for an investigation of the Muslim Brotherhood's influence on the federal government, contending in an interview that a probe is necessary because the Obama administration's horrendous decisions in backing the so-called Arab Spring revolutions in the Middle East. So Louis Gohmert is wondering, why did Barry Ho back the toppling of somewhat reliable dictators, reliable and in some part to reliable at least to suppress the Islamist tendencies of these Middle Eastern countries? Why did Barry back the toppling of those dictators in favor of, well, who knows what, the Muslim Brotherhood, frankly? I mean, And you didn't need bifocals to see it coming that the Islamists would step into the vacuum. But Barry, seemingly just completely oblivious to reality, assumed that this was a big democratic wave that was sweeping the Middle East, and it was celebrated by everyone. Anderson Cooper fell in love in Tahrir Square, you remember, with the Egyptian boy in the tight jeans. You remember all that? Anyway, so Louis Gohmert says, hey, I'm concerned that the Muslim Brotherhood has penetrated the highest levels of the American government. In an interview last Tuesday, according to WND, Gohmert charged that the administration was taking advice from the Muslim Brotherhood, the Egyptian-based movement formed after the demise of the old Turkish Ottoman Empire, with the intent of helping establish Islamic rule worldwide. Gohmert says, quote, you look at the decisions the Obama administration made, especially in the last 2 years and going through the revolutions in North Africa and the Middle East and in the Far East, and the only way you can explain the horrendous decisions that were so completely wrongheaded would be if the administration had a bunch of Muslim Brotherhood members giving them advice. Well, that would explain it, because otherwise it's inexplicable, if that's a word. Inexplicable? I believe it is. It's inexplicable. You remember back in July, Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann, along with three other Republican House members, pointed to Hillary Clinton's top aide, Huma Abedin, as a possible Muslim Brother influence on U.S. policy. They asked the inspector generals at the Department of Homeland Security, Justice, and State to investigate Huma Abedin, whose whole family is the Muslim Brotherhood. I believe her father or her grandfather was one of the founding members, for crying out loud. Anyway, Democrats and Republicans all freaked out and said that Gohmert and Bachmann and anyone else who would question the fact that this Muslim woman, whose whole family is tied in with the Muslim Brotherhood, could be anything but a patriotic American, was simply right-wing crackpottery. That's what they said. However, as WorldNet Daily reported, Abedin worked for an organization founded by her family that is effectively at the forefront of a grand Saudi plan to mobilize Muslim minorities in America to transform America into a strict Wahhabi-style Islamic state. That was according to an Arabic-language manifesto issued by the Saudi monarchy. Abedin, who now works with Hillary Clinton at the highest reaches of the American government, by the way, Huma Abedin, was also a member of the executive board of the Muslim Student Association, which was identified as a Muslim Brotherhood front group back in 1991, long before Louis Gohmert or Michelle Bachmann started becoming suspicious. The Muslim Brotherhood is the parent of most of the top Sunni terrorist organizations in the world, including Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and potentially now the U.S. State Department. You're the one who sets the bar. The hairdo king, the fashions are your fashion. I think that's the theme song of every single bureaucrat in the Obama administration. They're just partying, dancing, getting high, getting drunk, and having sex while the whole world is burning down around them. And the Muslim Brotherhood has penetrated. And don't tell me it couldn't happen. No, that's never happened before, that a government's been penetrated by their enemy from within and destroyed. No, that could never happen. We're America. We're immune to things that have happened in history before, no matter how stupid and distracted we get. No matter how desperate we get in our financial troubles and our spiritual and moral collapse. No, that could never happen to us, McBurney. You're a crackpot. Huma Abedin, she wakes up every morning and says the Pledge of Allegiance and waves the flag. Come on. That's never happened. All right. Now let's go to politics. Speaking of reptilian forces that have infected and infested the body politic in America, I've got another story from WorldNet Daily. Three in a row. Ding, ding. Joseph Farah wins the prize. Let's see here. What does WorldNet Daily have to say? Joseph Farah mouthpiece, Doug McBurney said on the air just this week. WorldNet Daily reports, if you're used to watching Fox News, you may notice a lot less FaceTime by certain political analysts. Yes, apparently Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, the man who built Rush Limbaugh and all things neoconservative, he wants the faces associated with the election off the air, specifically Karl Rove and Dick Morris. They've been banished, I guess, from Fox News. That's right. Well, for the moment anyways, right? Apparently the producers of Fox News programming, which, by the way, is not reliable conservative programming, ladies and gentlemen. It's transgendered and strippers reporting the news. And former entertainment hosts masquerading as conservatives and fooling all you stupid moronic idiots who think Fox News is conservative. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult probably 75% of my audience. Well, it is what it is, okay? If you think Fox News is conservative, you're not a conservative. When I want real news, I turn CNN on, frankly, when I'm looking for national news, because at least I know what the liberal bent is. I can put my filters on. With Fox News, you're always distracted by the strippers and the transgendered freaks. You don't know who's a guy, who's a girl. It's just bizarre over there at Fox. But anyways, Roger Ailes has sent Karl Rove and Dick Morris out into the wilderness because, well, they... Well, here's my opinion. So Dick Morris, I'm not sure. For now, Rove, he's out at Fox, but he's got so much money that he'll buy his way into politics forever. I mean, unless he's deported and stripped of his citizenship, which if anybody was going to start a petition outside of a personhood petition, that's the petition I would start. Deport Karl Rove and strip him of his citizenship. Make him a man without a nation. Send him out into no man's land. He needs to be gotten rid of in a political sense. Now, Dick Morris, well, you know, I'm less upset with Dick Morris. I think Dick was just drinking out of the same vat of Kool-Aid, you know, as Hannity and who's that other no-talent, unlistenable Limbaugh who comes on, talks about college sports and acts like he's a conservative. What's his name? Hugh Hewitt. Hugh Hewitt. Yeah, Hugh Hewitt and Karl Rove. They should be chained together at the ankles and stripped naked and deported out of the country. Dropped out of an aircraft with an automatic opening parachute somewhere over the Amazon. So anyway, was there any other point to that story except to just really dog out Karl Rove? Anyway, Dick Morris, I could probably forgive Dick. I don't know. I like Dick Morris all right. Anyway, he doesn't strike me as quite as just underhanded and sleazy as Karl Rove. All right. Now, let's focus on the culture. How come I have this Marine story here with okay, well, maybe there's a point to this, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see if these two stories follow, because this is the order I put them in, and I generally try to put these things in order. This is a story from theblaze.com from another person who is masquerading as a conservative, Glenn Beck. Although I like Glenn Beck all right, I guess I shouldn't be mad at everybody, you know. Yeah, whatever. Anyways, the Blaze reports that millennials, have you heard of millennials? These are people born, anyone born since the 1980s. The millennials are on track to exceed the baby boomers in terms of sheer numbers and are already engaged with politics at a level sufficient to make them a serious political force, according to the Blaze. President Obama was able to retain 60% of the millennial vote from Americans aged 18 to 29, and, well, he won the election. Now, according to a Gospel Coalition poll taken in April of this year, 25% of millennial voters list themselves as having no religion at all. Yeah. So the headline on the Blaze says, Republicans must give up on social issues or give up altogether, according to poll data. I don't know what the Blaze's take is on this. If I'm not mistaken, Glenn Beck has not been one of the ones out there saying we need to abandon the social issues. But to be honest with you, I haven't listened to him much lately since he predicted a landslide in the election. I mean, Glenn, if you had any decency, you would have hidden under a rock for at least a month after the election. It was just embarrassing. So I haven't been listening to Glenn, but I thought Glenn was a social issues guy, so I was kind of surprised to see this on The Blaze. So 25% of millennials say they have no religion. The decline in religious affiliation is especially strong among those who were raised Catholic or mainline Protestant. Nothing shocking there. Nothing can destroy one's faith in God faster than the Catholic Church or the mainline Protestant Church. It can really make you doubt the existence of God, I'm sure. Now, listen to this. Less than a quarter of millennials believe the Bible should be taken literally. For all of you who graduated the public schools, that's less than 25% of millennials believe the Bible should be taken literally. 26% believe the Bible is the Word of God, but not a literal document. And 37% believe the Bible is simply a document written by men with no divine inspiration whatsoever. So let's see, my public school education, 37 plus 26. What does that give us? 13, carry the 1. 63% of millennials are godless heathens.
Is it the same with the...
baby boomers? Is that about the same as baby boomers?
No, the religious leaders.
That's right. If you look at mainline Protestant churches and the Catholic Church, that's about the same number of their clergy who are on their way straight to hell with jet rockets because they don't know God. So anyway, this headline, Republicans must give up on social issues or give up altogether, and saying that, look, the millennials, we've already lost the millennials. Folks, by definition, the millennials are ignorant children who need to be told what to do. Yes, they need to be educated. They need to be told what to do. They need to be told what to believe. And if you know the truth, then you're not shy about telling people what to believe. You know, when we give millennials their, when they go to driving school, we don't couch everything we say. And now this is my opinion. If you hit the pedal that's on the right, it'll accelerate. And in my opinion, if you hit the pedal that's on the left, it'll slow you down. That's the brake, I think. I mean, that's just what I think. But, you know, you have to form your own opinion about these things. But I just want to give you my advice as an adult. I don't want to insult your intelligence. That's not what we do. We teach them how to drive. We tell them the facts. So those of us who know God and those of us who know the truth and have seen the revealed word of God, and have lived a bit of life, frankly, we don't need to give up on the millennials. We need to get out there and save these poor, ignorant children. They're on their way to hell, for crying out loud. Now, forget the fact that they're going to vote for Democrats. They're going to be tortured eternally in damnation if we don't get on our horses and get out there and spread the word amongst these millennials. And I truly believe that the personhood movement is the best way to reach these ignorant children who are just looking for meaning in their life. They're looking for something bigger than themselves to be involved in. And right now, I think it's rave parties and drugs and sex and it's not rock and roll anymore. What is it now? I don't even know what you call it anymore, what they're listening to. But anyway, to me, that just tells me there's more need for Christians to stand up and speak the truth to children. That's all. Don't give up on them. And certainly don't give up on your principles and the social issues. That's insanity. Well, then we'll all die, for crying out loud. All right, now can I tie the story of the millennials and their hedonism and heathenism into this story about the Marines? Well, Marines are taking new training exercises out at Camp Pendleton as they prepare to be deployed into combat zones. They're doing weekly meditation classes. Meditation. These are the Marines. It's called Mindfulness-Based Mind Fitness Training, or MFIT. It's a fledgling military initiative that teaches service members the secular meditative practice of mindfulness in order to bolster their emotional health and improve their mental performance under the stress and strain of war. MFIT, which is Mindfulness-Based Mind Fitness Training, was designed by former U.S. Army captain and current Georgetown University professor Liz Stanley. So anyway, I guess the way this ties in is that most of your Marines who are being subject to Liz's MFIT training, well, they're millennials, right? I mean, most of your young Marines were born in the 90s. They qualify. So I don't know. It's just odd. I mean, back in my day, when you were going to be deployed into a combat zone, I mean, they sent a chaplain in, and they handed out little New Testaments, and they prayed with you, And they tried to help you contemplate the fact that you might never come home and you might go out on the battlefield, kill and destroy as many of the enemy as you can, but you might be killed and you're going to meet Jesus. Let's say a prayer and let's get ready. But not anymore, apparently. In the new Millennial Marine Corps, they prepare them not with prayers and a Bible and a chaplain. Now it's a sodomy and meditation. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we're halfway home, ladies and gentlemen, in more ways than one, as we sit here at the precipice, the edge of the cliff, facing the end of the world as we know it. It's all coming together here in December. Quite an exciting month. Me, I'm looking forward to the Christmas scarf, despite the end of the Mayan calendar, despite the cliff. I won't say the F word, because if I hear that word one more time, the F word associated with cliff, I cannot take it. It's as if we're all being brainwashed. It's bizarre to me that everyone, whether they're on the alleged left or the alleged right, whether they're in the alleged pulpit or whether they're at the bar, they're all talking about the F-word cliff, and I can't take it anymore. I mean, it's just... anyway. So let's leave that aside. Not going to say that. Speaking of millennials, Blake Page has announced his decision to quit the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He quit last week. The 24-year-old told the Associated Press that a determination this semester that he could not become an officer because of clinical depression played a role in his public protest against what he calls the unconstitutional prevalence of religion in the military. So here we have a 24-year-old millennial punk who's upset that the West Point, who is preparing men to march forward under fire into combat, is shot through with religious overtones and undertones. And this little punk doesn't like it because he's one of these 63% who could either be a Catholic priest or a United Methodist reverend, or a millennial. Yeah, they're heathens. They're on their way to hell. And he doesn't like the fact. He says, here's what he says. I've been trying since I found that out. I mean, what can I do? What can I possibly do to initiate the change that I want to see? And so many other people want to see it too. I realize that this is one way I can make that change happen. I'm going to quit. Page criticized a culture where cadets stand silently for prayers and where non-religious cadets were jokingly called heathens. Who's calling that line? That line should not ring. Well, that should not ring during the broadcast. He says, cadets are jokingly called heathens by instructors at basic training. In announcing his resignation, he denounced criminals in the military who violate the oaths they were sworn to defend. The Constitution. He says, this is, what's his name here? 24-year-old millennial heathen. What's his name? I can't find his name again, but I don't care. Anyway, here's another quote from this little puke. I don't want to be a part of a West Point knowing that the leadership here is okay with just shrugging off and shirking off respect and good order and discipline and obeying the law and defending the Constitution and doing their job. So I'm leaving West Point. Page, that's his name, Page. Page said he had been medically disqualified because of clinical depression and anxiety. He said his condition has gotten worse since his father killed himself last year. Well, that's awful. Sorry about that. It's not unusual for cadets to drop out of West Point because of its rigorous academic and physical demands, but they typically do it in the first year where there's not a potential for penalty, in the first 2 years, I should say. But dropouts are rare after this point, and apparently this little heathen was in his third or fourth, maybe his senior year, and he's quitting. Page plans to remain an activist on the role of religion in the military. Imagine that. He says, "I'd really love to be able to do this for the rest of my life," unquote. So if you want to have an influence on the military, why are you quitting, you little puke? Anyway, now George Soros will read this article. He'll probably bankroll this punk. He'll probably end up getting himself he might get him a column over there at Media Matters with Terry Crapple, the guy who hates the Western Journalism Center. Remember I talked about him earlier? Terry Crapple is his name. Works for George Soros over at Media Matters. Be looking for the byline from, I've got to get this kid's name, apparently, because byline by, what's his name? Blake Page. Blake. Anyway. Way to go, Blake. You're washed out of West Point. Now you're going to get yourself a career over at Media Matters. Do it for the rest of your life. All right. Now on to the politics. Oh, I am sorry that the young man's father killed himself. That's tragedy. But it's no excuse for destroying Western civilization and the United States military. I'm sorry. Okay. On to the politics file from the New Yorker. The New Yorker says that Barry Ho has a gay rights to-do list in his next administration, and the New Yorker has 8 big ideas for Barry. Number 1 on Obama's gay rights to-do list from the New Yorker. Item number 1, appoint an openly gay person to the cabinet. Openly is the key phrase there. What's number 2? Extend sexual orientation non-discrimination protections to employees of all federal contractors. I'm sure Barry's already got that executive order in the wings. Promulgate regulations that are inclusive of LGBT Americans. Okay, New Yorker. That's a bit vague. But I think the LGBT community likes vague. I think they're okay with vague when it comes to many aspects of living. Be more responsive on immigration issues and more aggressive on the appointment of sympathetic federal judges. I don't understand that at all. I think the New Yorker is just trying to fill space here. What did you have, column inches that you just needed to fill over there at the New Yorker? I mean, somewhere there's a Mexican trotting across the Rio Grande looking up saying, "Hey, man, why you lumping me with the fags, man? I'm just looking to go pick some corn, okay? Why you got to lump me in with the queers?" That's true. Any immigrants, illegal or otherwise, to be lumping them in with the homosexuals, that's just a bridge too far, in my opinion. Number 5, make same-sex marriage legal in even more states. Number 6, federalize the marriage question. We're going to get to a story in just a moment where we will outline it, how Barry is exactly going to do that and how it's practically already been achieved. Number 7, how about a national gay civil rights bill? Well, let's just check in. Is it my next story? We'll check in with the next story on those last 3, which all 3 of them could have been one, proving that at journalism school, they teach you how to repeat the obvious over and over and assume that your audience is a bunch of morons. Number 8, finally, gay rights supporters would like President Obama to be more of an advocate during his second term rather than someone who at times looks like he's being dragged along. Actually, I think that the leaders of the homosexual movement would actually like the president to dress in drag once in a while, maybe at a state dinner, maybe at one of his press conferences in the Rose Garden. "Hey, Barry, when you came to us, when you needed us, we were there for you, Barry. We put you back in the Oval Office. So next time you're doing a press conference, next time you're in the Rose Garden, could you just put on a dress just for us?" Yeah, Nationwide exit polling this year showed that 49% of Americans now support homosexual marriage, reflecting a continuing rapid shift toward acceptance. Maybe 4 years from now, advocates will need a whole new list. That's what the New York, yeah, and they will, because every one of these things will be achieved. In fact, let's go to the Supreme Court. Dayline Washington from Fox News. The Supreme Court will take up California's ban on homosexual marriage. The court will also decide whether Congress can deprive legally married homosexual couples of federal benefits otherwise available to married people under a provision of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. So the Supreme Court, John Roberts, Chief Justice over there? John Roberts, who stabbed everyone in the back with his Obamacare ruling, is going to now take up both California's ban on homosexual marriage and the Defense of Marriage Act. According to Fox News, the cases will probably be argued in March, with decisions expected by late June. The California case could allow the justices to decide whether the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of equal protection means that the right to marriage cannot be limited to heterosexuals. A decision to favor gay marriage could set a national rule and overturn every state constitutional provision and law banning homosexual marriage. So wouldn't that be appropriate, June being the month favored by heterosexuals when they get married? You know that? My wife and I got married in June. Do you remember that? Vaguely. My wife and I had a June wedding. And now, in order to add insult to injury, John Roberts and the Supreme Court are going to legalize nationally homosexual marriage, probably in June, just in time for the homosexuals to take over June now. June used to be the month for weddings. Now it'll be the month for sodomy, perversion, and despicable behavior, all codified by law and recognized by states across the union. That's what we get, ladies and gentlemen, for 25 years, you know, we've been told that we have to tolerate homosexuals. Well, no, we were only told that for about 10 years. And then for the past 10 years, we've been told we need to celebrate diversity. And now perversity is going to achieve a position in society higher than heterosexual marriage. And let me tell you why, because everyone's obsessed with the economy, right? Everyone says, well, we've got economic problems. We have to worry about the economy. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Finance. I almost said it. The F word cliff. All of that, right? That's all the news. Well, from the culture file from CNN, homosexuals not only reported significantly higher annual incomes compared with heterosexual couples. You want the numbers? Homos average over $61,000 a year. Normal people, around $50,000 a year is the median. But homosexuals also carried about $4,000 less in debt than the average American and had $6,000 more in household savings. They were even slightly more likely to have jobs in the first place, with homosexual unemployment, which this may be the first time this has ever been reported, but that's how pervasive their movement's success has been. Homosexual unemployment is at 7% versus the national rate of 7.9%. Which I think it's 7.7 this week, but who knows? The homo rate probably went down to 6.8. Now, CNN gets into why all this is true. They say homosexuals are generally well-educated, and I would have to agree, homosexuality being one of the top exports of American college campuses. They say uncertainty about the future of gay rights prompts homosexuals to be especially prudent with their money. Well, I don't know about how I would agree with that, but they're free to have their opinion. Basically, this article says, look, homosexuality is better than heterosexuality, at least from a financial standpoint. And I mean, in modern day America, is there anything that matters more than a financial standpoint? If you listen to the news every day, whether you're listening to conservative talk radio, Fox News, CNN, or MSNBC, they're all talking about the same thing. The premier issues are financial and economic, and the social issues be damned. And where do we end up at the end of the day with that, ladies and gentlemen? we end up with the young people, these millennial ignorant children, being taught that homosexuals are better than us normal people. She's got the jack. 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 She's got one more line from this story. One more. The CNN reporter says, most will agree that the LGBT community is a largely untapped and potentially lucrative customer base when it comes to financial planning. Yes. This was all based on information from the Prudential Group and their chief diversity officer over at Prudential was quoted heavily and saying how wonderful the homosexual community is because, well, they don't have a lot of kids to raise, and they don't have grandkids, and they tend to have more money than heterosexuals, and so obviously they're better than us.
Yeah, they got extra diseases.
Well, they do have the diseases to deal with. That's true. but that I don't think that's not factored in on their personal financial statements. Anyway, they have insurance to cover all that. I think Obama, you get free penicillin shots and all of that. Free AZT, the whole deal. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, the big story of the week. This is the biggest story of the week. It's from CNN. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida has attempted to clear up his controversial answer to a question about the Earth's age last month. This continues to make news, ladies and gentlemen. Why? Why? If you listen to Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, NBC, pick any one of them. Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, Glenn Beck, Hugh Hewitt. Is there anyone I missed? There's probably a bunch, but they're all the same. They say that these questions over the age of the earth, over origins and evolution and homosexuality and abortion, these are side issues. That's what they tell us, right? But then if that's true, why is it that the liberal media insist on cornering a fellow like Mark Rubio on the age of the earth? And I'll tell you why. And you millennials need to pay attention to this, because if you don't realize this already, it's about time you got it through your thick little skulls. Questions about origins, about morality, about who we are, about where we came from and where we're going, those are the biggest questions in life. Those are the most important issues in life. And they always have been since time immemorial. It's only in the past few years that we've been convinced that social issues are somehow disconnected from everything else. And it's just a small band of kooky Christians who are concerned about baby killing and homosexuality and the age of the earth and where we came from. But these are the biggest questions in life. You need to ask them seriously, and you need to humble yourself and look for the answers, even though they may make you appear to be a smaller person than you think you are. Okay? So, Marco Rubio was asked, how old do you think the earth is? And he shucked and jived and shuffled and backfilled and sandbagged. He didn't know what to say. So here's what he's updated his answer. He says, science says the earth is about 4.5 billion years old. My faith teaches that's not inconsistent. That's what he told Politico at a breakfast interview. Rubio said, quote, God created the heavens and the earth, and science has given us an insight into when he did it and how he did it. Okay, first of all, Marco, God is a person. You can say God did this and God said that. Science is not a person. Science doesn't say anything. Scientists say things. People who call themselves scientists say things. Politicians say things, Marco. They say embarrassing things sometimes. But science doesn't say anything, Marco. Science can't talk. Science is not a god, Marco. How could this fellow be so embarrassed? I had so much high hopes for this guy. He listened to Marco. He says, quote, the more science learns, the more I am convinced that God is real. As if science is a part of the Trinity up there with God. Marco, come back to us, brother. What's happened to you? Rubio was asked, we'll go back to the CNN article. Rubio was asked how old the planet was in an interview with GQ magazine, and he replied saying that the Earth's age is, quote, one of the great mysteries, unquote. Emphasizing that he was not a scientist, Rubio said, whether the Earth was created in 7 days or seven actual eras, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we'll ever be able to answer that question. Okay. All right. So can I ask you folks, the media keep bringing this up with Rubio, and pretty much any conservative politician, they're going to hit you on when does life begin? They're going to hit you on how old is the Earth? Do you believe in Noah's flood? They're going to hit you with these questions. Why is that? Because there's a lot of controversy about this, but is there ever a fierce pushback or a debate over heliocentrism, you know, or the speed of light? No, there's not, because those are settled scientific issues. The reason there is such controversy around these issues is because this is a big issue, the biggest issue. Where did we come from? Where are we going? How old is the universe? Is there a God who created everything? These are big, big questions. Much bigger than how much your 401k is going to go up or down if we fall off the F-word cliff. Okay? Much bigger. And don't let anybody lie and tell you that these questions are only of concern to a small group of right-wing kooks. Rubio said he was originally talking about the theological debate over the Earth's age, not the scientific debate. Marco, the debate over the age of the Earth is a philosophical debate. It's neither a religious debate nor is it a scientific debate. It's a philosophical debate. But I mean, Marco's been focused on fiscal conservatism for the last 2 to 4 years, and he's probably lost track of a lot of what's going on in the debate and the science that has been discovered. Science doesn't say anything. We can discover truths in science and by science. And Marco probably hasn't been paying attention because he's been focused on fiscal issues. But he says science has established definitively that the planet is at least 4.5 billion years old. I'd ask him to cite this definitive evidence. Mr. Rubio, can you bring science out on the stage with you and have him give this definitive evidence? But I know that he could only cite the fact. The only definitive evidence he has is that if you deny that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, certain people laugh at you and make fun of you. That's the definitive evidence that has made Mr. Marco Rubio shift his stance. He doesn't want to be chuckled at by certain members of the Politico staff. Let's see. Marco emphasized it was a matter of how do you reconcile what science has definitively established with what you may think your faith teaches. Marco, man. Marco says, quote, my belief is that the story the Bible tells about God creating this magnificent earth on which we live, that is essentially true. So when you see the word essentially before true, that means he's leaving open the possibility that it's completely false. He says that's fundamentally true. There's another one. When somebody prefaces the word true with fundamentally, that means they're leaving open the possibility that it's a lie, and they could abandon that position completely at any given time on a moment's notice. Marco says, now, whether creation happened exactly as we might understand it reading the text of the Bible, that, you know, I don't presume to know. Okay, so Marco, you're unqualified to be a political leader. You're unqualified. Well, let's just leave it at that, Marco, because I do want to. I want to think you're a decent human being. Asked why he thought his original comments caused such a stir, he said he didn't think the dialogue made it far beyond the Beltway. Yeah. So, Marco, you're absolutely wrong about that. These are the type of comments that shoot out at the speed of light beyond the Beltway, Marco, because these are the big issues that people have been concerned about since the dawn of time. But I realize the country is full of ignorant heathens, millennials, and otherwise who prefer to ignore the important questions. These are the big questions that could save the country and our children. And instead, the ignorant masses, they want to focus on money and sports and pornography and F word Cliff and all of that. And Marco, I can see that you are a bit bedazzled by it all. I remain thoroughly unimpressed, frankly. All right, now, quickly. We're almost out of time, and I have way too much stuff here. This is embarrassing. Only got to half my news this week. Well, maybe I'll have a chance to come back with you on a few of these stories, but let's go to this movie, Steven Spielberg movie about Abraham Lincoln. There's a controversy about the language in the film. Movie Guide, which is a Christian, they review films from a Christian perspective, say there are about 40 obscenities in the PG-13 rated movie Lincoln. Similarly, the Dove Foundation laments that, quote, the language they feature in the film does not line up with the morals and language of the time period. Yeah. So apparently this movie Lincoln, which I haven't seen, I haven't gone to see a movie since The Passion. I went and saw The Passion of the Christ, and before that, went and saw The Patriot. Those are the last two movies I've seen. And at the time of their release, and I haven't watched anything else because I'm not into movies. But apparently the movie is filled with profanity. And the fact is that in the early to mid 19th century, profanity was simply not used in public, and certainly not in political settings, professional settings, anywhere near the way it's used today. So some historians are saying, look, this just isn't historically accurate, that Abraham Lincoln and the politicians and the people around him in professional settings were cursing like a bunch of sailors all the time. But Doris Kearns Goodwin, plagiarist and author, begs to differ. She says, quote, I saw pretty much every draft of the script and never had a problem with the language. That's Doris Kearns Goodwin, well-known plagiarist and author. I have the answer to why this is. And I think it's fairly simple. I think that modern humanists, secular humanist, heathen scum, filth like Steven Spielberg and Doris Kearns Goodwin, they can't imagine a world that's not full of foul-mouthed, sex-obsessed heathens. That is their world that they've grown up in and in which they exist. They can imagine no other way. They probably didn't even notice that they had 40 profanities in the movie until someone pointed it out. And Spielberg's probably sitting there going, oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Doris Kearns Goodwin is like, oh, the profanity? Let me go back and watch it again. Oh, yeah, you're right, wow. That's because that's who these people are, and they know no other way. And these people are dominating the culture of our nation and destroying our children, frankly. Lord Monckton was evicted from the Unclimate Summit, yeah, after a news conference. The United Kingdom's Lord Christopher Monckton quietly slipped into the seat reserved for the delegation of Myanmar, clicked the button on the microphone and said, quote, in the 16 years we've been coming to these conferences, there has been no global warming. Well, that infuriated all the global warming activists who make their living at conferences like this. He was escorted from the hall and security officers stripped him of his UN credentials. Gotta love Lord Monckton. All right, I'm out of time. Oh, his story here from the Washington Times. Families of people killed there in Benghazi, the family of Tyrone Woods and the family of Glenn Doherty, they want to know what happened there in Benghazi, and they've been asking questions. But you know who we haven't heard from is the family of Christopher Stevens, the ambassador. His family doesn't seem to be all that interested in what happened. I wonder why that is. I wonder why we haven't heard from them. Anyway, just a question that I'll pause it. Maybe we'll get into it next year. All right. Finally, this is from thesmokinggun.com. A Wisconsin man who has fathered 9 children with 6 women was ordered last week to cease procreating until he can support his numerous offspring. Yeah, a circuit judge told the 44-year-old Racine, Wisconsin man that his frequent breeding was to be curbed as a condition of his 3-year probation term. This fellow owes about $90,000 in back child support to the mothers of his, how many children? 9 children. His rap sheet also includes convictions for passing bad checks, criminal damage, burglary, just another product of the modern American culture and the government school system. Folks, when fornication and adultery are not criminalized, a civilization will be awash in illegitimate children, irresponsible adults. And folks, these children are broken and damaged, and they're going to go on, and they are going to be the future of the country, folks. So I guess I'll leave it at that. Probably can't say more than that. Adultery and fornication should be crimes, okay? That's all. It's criminal behavior. And there's the fruit of it right there. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. That's KGOV. I want to thank my friends at Theology Online, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life. Is there anybody I missed? I think I got them all. We will be back with you should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.